I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to Leadovation, Reimagine, Facilitate, Flourish. This podcast is dedicated to the art and science of innovative leadership. Through insightful interviews with industry experts, I bring you cutting-edge strategies and experiences of innovative leadership, helping you think differently, act strategically, and achieve remarkable results. Join me as I provide insights and tools that empower you to make smarter decisions, forge meaningful relationships. Welcome to Leadovation. Today's guest sits right at the intersection of two very powerful forces, the relentless pace of technology and the timeless need to stay human. Nathan Whitaker isn't just a tech expert. He's someone who's helping organizations, CEOs, and teams navigate the massive shift brought on by AI, not with fear or hype, but with clarity, wisdom, and a dose of grounded perspective. In our conversation, we don't just talk about large language models or productivity hacks. We go deeper. We explore what it means to be a leader in a world where your newest teammate might not be a person, but an algorithm. We ask whether becoming more efficient is making us less connected. And we talk about the risk of outsourcing so much that we lose sight of the very things that make us and our companies distinctly human. Nathan has written the CEO's Digital Survival Guide, but what makes his voice so compelling is that he's not just helping companies survive the digital age, he's helping them wake up to what really matters. His perspective is informed not only by years in the tech space, but also by time spent in nature, on long hikes, and on reflection, reminding us that contrast sharpens value, that stepping away from tech might be the very thing that helps us use it more wisely. This episode is for anyone who's asking the bigger questions about where we're heading, not just as businesses, but as people. This is the Leadovation Podcast. I'm Dean Newland. Let's dive in. Well, Nathan, it is great to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. AI and technology certainly seems to be the big discussion points in a lot of boardrooms. Let me ask you a big overarching question. Are we making too much of AI and its potential disruption, or are we not knowing just how big this is going to be and we're mitigating it in some ways in our minds?
I would say the usefulness of AI is starting to happen, but it is not overtaking everything that we thought, what maybe the news cycle thought it would or was portraying it would, you know, immediately. You know, I think, you know, as these large language models like ChatGPT or Grok and Gemini and things have come out, you know, I think the news and pundits tried to make it sound like it's going to take over everything. Yeah. But it's certainly been disruptive in certain industries. And I think it's going to continue to be disruptive. Now, the question is usefulness, especially for small to lower middle market businesses, we're not seeing, you know, the ROI in a lot of areas yet, but I think we will very soon as our vendors, the line of business applications, start incorporating more and more AI to make mundane tasks much easier in the systems. But you know, it's certainly in different industries, it's becoming more disruptive. And I think it will continue to be that way. But I think we're just on the cusp of it. I don't think, unless you're a large company and implementing a lot of things yourself, we're not seeing a huge ROI quite yet. Just small incremental things.
So in the life cycle of AI, have we been born yet? Are we walking around? Are we young adults? Are we mature? What's your analogy for the life cycle of AI in our world yet?
Yeah, I think if you look at like the, you know, bell curve, you know, we look at the life cycle of technology often, or diffusion of innovation curve, I think we're just on that lower ramp. You know, we're just probably starting up that lower ramp of a bell curve of the usefulness of AI until it goes into maturity. So, you know, certainly a lot of early adopters, I mentioned, you know, large enterprises, you know, like a credit card company has been using AI for, you know, 10 or 15 years to detect fraud, and it's getting much better, you know, things like that. But, you know, most small businesses are not Visa or, right, you know, Citibank.
You know, that we're not incorporating and building these systems out ourselves. And, you know, that's where, you know, for general business, we're just kind of at the cusp of seeing what it can do.
What's your sense about the balance between using AI and human interactions? Like, for example, you mentioned, you know, credit card companies and fraud mitigation, which obviously makes a lot of sense. But I'm also personally noticing that there is some companies are really jumping onto AI with call centers and so forth. But at the same time, what they're losing is that customer experience. Are you finding that some organizations are going too far into the nice, shiny new tool of AI and having to pull back because we've lost the value of how we want to serve our clients?
I think what we need to look at AI as being, well, I think two sides. You know, there's internal use of AI, you know, being a supplement to our team. And I like referring to your ChatGPTs or, you know, Grok or, you know, some of these language models that we're using are just really smart interns, you know, very excited and smart interns. They have a lot of knowledge. You know, they just studied a lot in college and, you know, they're very excited to do all the work, but they're not, you know, able to really put all the pieces together, and they need somebody with expertise to ensure that they're going the right direction in their assistance. I think where companies make mistakes is they just take AI output and, you know, put it out there in marketing or sales or blogs or, you know, do exactly what it says. And then, you know, it's easy to tell what's written by AI if you're not editing it. You know, too many little icons or dashes.
Right.
It's just interesting to see.
Green check marks.
yeah, for sure. So, you know, it's certainly from a tool. We have to just understand what it is and what the capabilities are. I'll give you an example. You know, when we have a call center, you know, we offer support from technology sector. And, you know, we haven't ever done a 24/7 internal call center inside our company. We have team members that are available, call it 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to answer our calls live in any one of the time zones that we're in. So after hours, we've outsourced it. And we decided to do an experiment a couple of months ago to use an AI tool to put in tickets rather than having a outsourced call center to take requests from clients after hours over, you know, emergency requests. And we did it as a test for overflow initially to see how it worked for about a month and see what the response was from clients. And I can tell you the number of calls that we got that people didn't believe that they were talking to a live person was very startling, you know, because it would ask them at the end, you know, would you like me to connect you to a live person with any further questions? And we see the transcripts in it, and the number of people said, I thought I was talking to a live person. It was very interesting. Okay. And I think the people, we had a couple of disgruntled people that just, you know, didn't want to talk to technology, and we had the option at any time, you know, connect to a live agent. But the response we got, because the AI agent was very efficient on taking the information, doing some easy troubleshooting with the user and getting a ticket in and over to a technician, was actually better than our outsourced call center. And so we went not 24/7 to it. It's overflow during the day. Hmm. And then after hours, it goes 100% to this AI agent. And we're seeing positive results from it. But it's the response on the back end. You know, if the client is seeing that they're not getting a fast enough response for their issues, then that's where the concern comes in. So if it is better for the client, better for the customer experience, then they're going to be happier with that AI tool. If they have worse experience in the end, then they're going to backlash against it. And so every company's got to make that decision on however they deploy it. Is it going to be positive or negative to the customer experience?
So, Nathan, I'm thinking about how people slowly start to adapt to something that maybe the first time they interface with AI, they may not like it, but over time, it just becomes the environment that they work in. So do you feel that some companies have a long-term strategy when it comes to interfacing with their clients, their end stakeholders using AI, knowing that in the beginning, it's going to be a bitter pill, but that through time and more companies doing it, they're going to get used to it and it's no longer going to be an issue. And they're playing the long game. They're not playing the short game. Yes, we're going to see a spike in customer issues, but give us another year or 2 years. Everyone's going to be fine because it's going to be so ubiquitous. What's your sense about that?
I would agree with you. I think that, you know, there's certainly going to be generations of people that are not going to be as accepting of new technologies. I think, you know, you look at any technology, whether it's, you know, smartphones or the internet or email or, you know, calculators or whatever technology, you know, comes around, right? You know, there's always pushback until it's fully adopted. And again, that diffusion of innovation and technology, that bell curve, you have early adopters, you have the bleeding edge all the way up to a mature environment. And there's going to be pushback until it, from certain people, certain groups of people, until you hit that maturity level. And then it's just fully accepted. So, you know, you have to have a strategy. And one thing I would suggest from a technology standpoint, and I think this is an advice for any part of our business, you don't want to outsource to technology your core business or to, you know, outside, you know, whatever it is, technology, outside company. You know, there's something special about each company. And as long as you focus what you're good at and the reason for existence as a company and keep that internal, you can use automation, you can use outside technologies, you can use outsourcing to handle the things that aren't core to your business. But you certainly don't want to outsource what makes you special as a company, because then you're just like everybody else.
Right.
So if putting in a ticket for us doesn't make a difference to our clients, you know, the ticket entry process, people could email us, could do a chat with us, could put it on our website. That process, again, it's not core, but solving that problem, it goes to one of our employees, our technicians. We made the decision strategically, US-based team to serving US-based customers. And that's core to us. So, you know, if developing a marketing piece or reviewing a contract, that's not core to our business, that's ancillary. And so how can I automate those things and make it easier on the whole team? And that's the decisions we make, is automate and, you know, figure out ways to do things that aren't core to our business. Everything else, we make sure that we do our bread and butter internally.
Understood. I'm imagining down the road within an organization that is almost like a new member of the team that slowly started to show up, you know, and the new member of the team is AI, whether it's bots and, you know, agents and so forth. They become much more embedded in the way in which we do things. How do you see leadership changing as a result of AI maturing?
That's an interesting question. I'll answer a part of your question that you didn't really ask me. It was a survey that I thought was interesting. As Microsoft was testing, rolling out Copilot, Microsoft Copilot, they did a survey of their beta testing customers. They gave, you know, AI to, you know, a subset of customers to try out. And they asked them, you know, would they give it up for a free lunch, which was interesting, like free lunch every day. And, you know, that's worth something, right? Getting a free lunch in the office, time off to have, you know, free food. And, you know, a lot of people are very food motivated, especially I find my technicians are very food motivated inside my company. And it was like 78% of employees would prefer to keep their AI tool than give up it for a free lunch every day. So that was an interesting survey because it was something, you know, like I can have whatever I want to eat or I can give up my AI tool. And most people, a large majority, would have preferred to keep their AI tool over a free lunch. So I guess that's the question, you know, from a leadership standpoint, I think we need to realize as leaders of organizations, our staff has a lot of digital debt, which means they are often overwhelmed by full inboxes, you know, chat messages coming in on Teams or Slack, phone calls, unanswered, you know, messages, voicemails. And there's just a lot of digital debt that people deal with every day, and they want to work on, you know, what they were hired to do, whether, you know, it's an engineer or an attorney or CPA, you know, they want to work on their professional work But they find themselves spending 60% of their time answering emails or sitting in Teams meetings. And if there's a way to automate that side of things to reduce it down from 60% of the time to maybe 20 or 30% of the time, that's what people want. So things like, oh, I rather than having to take notes, I'd rather have the meeting transcribed and summarized by a chatbot. That helps me out a lot.
Sure.
You know, or can I have my calendar filled up automatically by a tool that kind of automates emails coming in and communication and making sure that my appointments are set up correctly without having to hire and have an administrative assistant. So those things I think people appreciate. And from a strategy standpoint, as leaderships of the organization, going actually to answer your question, we have to figure out ways to help our team members work on the things that they were hired to do, especially our professionals. They want to be creative. They want to be experts in their field. And if they're spending, 60% of their time doing things that, they don't want to do, that leads to burnout and frustration. So if there's technology that can help resolve that problem, that's the strategy us as leaders need to implement.
So I wonder, I hadn't thought about this before until you said it. I'm wondering if we are slowly moving our team members and our leaders to become subject matter experts instead of a jack of all trades. I mean, versus a broad horizontal understanding of the business or the strategy, that we're really becoming SMEs because we are now pushing away those things that are considered non-essential work. Do you sense that too? Are we beginning the new era of subject matter experts versus broad-based leadership?
I think so. I really do agree with that statement that the leader and your ideal employee of the future is going to be hiring that expert that understands really well what they do. And, they can rely on technology to answer, other things, other questions. You can maybe go to, I'll give you this example. As leaders, we often have to review contracts or, maybe proposals. And a lot of times, for me, at least as a leader in my organization, I'll read through like a non-disclosure agreement or something that, probably isn't, going to be a big issue for my organization. And I'll read it through myself. Maybe I'll need to send it over to an attorney. But, I could use AI to review it quickly for me, give me the high points, things that I need to look out for, and, reduce my time maybe from 30 minutes to an hour of reviewing that document to just getting a summary of 10 minutes, and then save me a bunch of time of having to be an expert on reading that agreement or, spending money with an attorney to, an outside attorney to do it. So,
yeah.
I'm not saying, for complex, if you're going into a contractual, let's say merger acquisition, you don't want to have ChatGPT, be your negotiator for for the purchase of your company.
For sure. But I do wonder though that downstream, if you begin to create more and more and reinforce more and more sort of siloed subject matter experts, because we're handing off all the other non-essential work, and over time, that's what we begin to attract, as we begin to have on our teams, there's a lot of subject matter experts. My sense is that the more you get a deep dive knowledge into one thing, you lose a certain amount of diversity of thought in other things, meaning that we become a little less agile in our emotional intelligence because we haven't lived in other perspectives because our job no longer requires it. Our job requires us to be siloed subject matter experts. So I'm wondering, I'm thinking like 10 years out, maybe less than 10 years out, how this is going to affect the interpersonal dynamics within an office as we continue to build these subject matter experts. You have any thoughts on that?
I see your point.
You see your point.
Yeah, no, I definitely see it. I have this theory, I call it the sponge theory. We deal with a lot of really smart people that we consult with, especially in the medical field. So I've learned over the years that doctors are really good subject matter experts. And I think we expect them to be, right?
Yes, right.
And, often
you know, especially if a small practitioner, let's say, you know, solo doctor practitioner, you know, one doctor has an office manager, maybe a few front desk staff, a few nursing assistants. They are all there. The team's all there to support the doctor to do what he does. And a lot of times the doctor, because they're so focused on, you know, being a great cardiologist or a great internal medicine doctor, they lose sense of, you know, how billing occurs and these different things. And they have to, you know, hire different people to handle that. And really, it's just, they don't understand really how their own business operates because they're just so focused. And people get frustrated with doctors because they say they have like no bedside manner and no personality. Right. And it really is because they're just, you know, so focused on their subject matter. And I see your point, you know, thinking of that example,
right,
that you can lose sight of, you know, being a little bit more diverse in thought. And I think that's, you know, from a leadership perspective, it is important for leaders to have, you know, a great group of individuals around them that are experts in their different areas and have, you know, that different perspective into the leadership team.
Speak about healthcare a little bit more, because we've got a lot of healthcare clients as well, and they have sort of taken a very slow approach into AI, for example, because of the safety, security, HIPAA laws and so forth. Where do you see that going? At what point will we be able to see large healthcare systems adapt things like Gemini's ChatGPT, whatever that particular tool might be, knowing that that information is protected?
Yeah, so most of the large companies that provide AI services like your ChatGPT do have versions of their systems that are HIPAA compliant. You know, they don't use the data that you're feeding into it to train other models. But I really think, especially in healthcare, you're going to want a specialized model and incorporate it into your diagnostic systems to, I think where I'm reading studies that they're seeing some success is incorporation of very targeted models that, you know, if you're a radiologist that can read, you know, an MRI or CT scan and detect and supplement the radiologist and their detection abilities. And those are going to be custom models. So you're not thinking of a publicly, you know, a public model like Gemini. You're going to think about a custom designed system. And if somebody's really particular, there are ways of running private models on even a Mac computer or, you know, a hardened system internally. So if you are concerned about your data getting released, let's say you're an attorney and you're really concerned about your court cases or your confidential information getting out there in public, you can run private models on your systems. And, you know, an individual attorney can have just their own model running on their own computer. It requires a pretty hefty machine to do that, but it's not that hard to get it set up. So that's a way to do it and kind of mitigate, is knowing that you have a private system that's not sharing data with, you know, guaranteed with anybody else.
Yeah. Okay. Hey, let's move to the CEO for a second. I think you've got a book out and it was sort of making the point, one of the pieces around how CEOs sort of associate digital strategy with IT decisions rather than business reinvention. Can you talk about whether CEOs should, in fact, be delegating this to the IT team and come back to the ELT and tell us what we should do with AI, and then we'll fund it based on what we think is right? Or how involved should the top brass, the CEO, be involved with AI? And is this also the point in which we need to really think about reinventing the entire company because we've got a new, huge, disruptive change that we have before us?
Yeah, I think what I point out in the book, The CEO's Digital Survival Guide, is that a lot of times CEOs don't want to be involved in technology when they look at it as just a cost center to their company rather than something that drives productivity and drives innovation inside their company. So a lot of times they think IT is there just to, you know, help my printer work and keep my, you know, computer from getting hacked. And that's really not what, you know, your IT department or your IT team is. They should be part of the overall strategy of the company, because IT
and technology in general really drives innovation inside the company. And what we're seeing today, if you think about companies where they were 50 years ago or 100 years ago, the way that we operate is so different today because of technology. And if we're thinking about, you know, new technology like AI coming in, and I wrote the CEO's Digital Survival Guide before, you know, ChatGPT came out to the be available to the public. But I think the principles are the same, is that you're the CEO, the leadership team of the company needs to bring in the IT team. And in larger enterprises, you have somebody that's, you know, your CTO or CIO that sits on your board, sits in the leadership team. And a lot of small businesses, lower middle market companies don't have that strategist that's sitting on the leadership team. And I think it's essential that you're incorporating that IT strategy as part of the overall strategy of the company, because your competitors, one, are doing it. There's somebody else that's wanting to be better and be more productive. And two, as a company, you know, to attract good talent today, to be more productive, to do better work with less team members, we have to use technology to do that. And I'm thinking, you know, if you read the newspaper, you know, recently they're talking about, you know, global population reaching a maximum in the next few years, and especially industrialized and first world countries have now not hit their replacement birth rates, and we're going to see declining population. You know, you look at Japan, even look at China, but the U.S., particularly in Europe, our birth rates are lower than our replacement rate of population. And we've been able to survive in the U.S. with that because of immigration. But, you know, the policies of the federal government right now are reducing immigration. And so I think companies have to realize that we have to do more work with less people. And it's not just like there's not not enough people in the field. It's just we're not going to see a dramatic population increase overall. So we have to be thinking in our companies of how we can be productive and more productive with the same amount or less people.
Right. I have a sort of a philosophic question for you, Nathan. I see there's this almost frenetic speed to adapt AI. There is a feeling, and you just said it, that if we're not beginning to figure out how we're going to use AI to make ourselves more productive, gosh darn it, your competitor probably is. And so there's this internal tension, like, God, we got to get this, but we don't quite understand it. So there's that sort of frenzy towards adoption. You know, it's like getting somebody on the moon in the 60s. We got to hurry and get that flag on the moon before the Russians do. It feels a little bit like that. And then on the other hand, there's this existential fear I'm sensing in some organizations, like, well, if we continue on this pace, then what does it mean to be human? And what is a human experience versus an AI experience? And should we be thinking about that as a company? Or are these people in your industry who are the experts in AI adoption and so forth, is there somebody behind the veil that's sort of thinking about the human existence in the future? Or is there the rightful fear that we're just running after this technology without really morally thinking about its implications on what it means to be a person on this planet? What's your thoughts to that?
Well, I comment one on your first first point. I don't always like using that analogy, and I did it just a minute ago about, you know, the competitor is going to use technology to overtake you.
Yeah.
And I can rest assured tell you that every company is grappling with the same issues that, you know, you are. How do we adopt it today? Nobody's got it fully figured out, you know, and so everybody's grappling with the same question that's even talking about it. But it's good that we're having those conversations and trying to figure out a way forward. So I doubt that there's a lot of organizations that have fully figured out an AI strategy. They're dabbling in different areas. So it's good that you're having those conversations. It's not thinking that, oh, I got this race to the competitor with my competitor to get this solved. Everybody's having the same issue.
Okay.
You know, philosophically,
Oh, you know, it is a good question. And I do ask myself, being in the technology field, that a lot. And I'm sure this is an issue, you know, for 100 years, you know, that or more, as technology has, you know, increased in speed and adoption and capabilities, you know, as computers came out, as the internet came out, you know, and you look at it, you know, you think about the internet, it definitely, the amount of time that we spend on our mobile devices, there's a lack of interpersonal connection, you know, and they've studied it. They've shown that people that spend more and more time, you know, on their mobile devices lose that personal connection. But on the other hand, we are more connected as a world. You know, I spent time in South America for a few years. I'm able to stay connected with people that I knew and met down there. When I came back to the U.S. in the 90s from my time down there, you know, it costs $1 a minute to make a phone call down there, or you wrote letters, and that's the way that we communicated. Now, you know, you can have a connection there, you know, instantaneously, which is amazing. So I think we just figure out ways to use technology to the betterment of ourselves. And then there's a portion with any technology that's used to worsen the human experience. So I think, you know, I think there's both, right? I definitely think there's both. So what does it mean to be human? I think it's building those interpersonal, you know, that time together. I personally like taking time out to go on hikes and leave my cell phone behind, that I'm not, you know, there's no cell coverage in the mountains where I go backpacking. And that's what led me to write my book, is, you know, that time in the mountains to think and be away from technology allowed me to reconnect back with nature, back to the world, back with myself. And I think that's important for us to do too. So, you know, whatever you're in, you know, taking that time away from technology, I think, is essential.
It does bring up a good point, though, that you just made, that your ability to appreciate that time without technology and therefore make those human connections, connect with nature, connect with yourself, is probably a sweeter, I'm going to put words in your mouth, a sweeter experience, because it doesn't happen every moment. It's like when you're on a vacation, you're walking the beach, you go like, oh, I love walking the beach. We were just down at the beach, my wife and I, and over at Cannon Beach, you know, probably that area because you got a place here in Oregon. Oh, it's so incredibly gorgeous, right? And the reason why, in some ways, it's so incredibly gorgeous is because we don't have it every day. You know? And then we go back to our house. I was literally sitting in the backyard, and we have a really pretty backyard. And we're going like, yeah, this is a really pretty backyard, but it's not the beach. But at one point, the backyard that we have now was the pinnacle goal that we would have had when we lived down in Phoenix. So it's sort of like the contrast of technology sweetens the experience of being human and the interpersonal connections we have. So in some ways, it can sharpen those desires and those practices, hiking, you know, whatever your particular thing might be, to bring back those sort of human experiences, because we can't take them for granted anymore, right? It is something we have to choose and intend versus it just being there.
I've thought about this. I'm an endurance athlete, and I really enjoy my time of training, you know, running and cycling. And, you know, I thought about it, you know, if I was 100, 150 years ago, you know, I wouldn't have to take an hour or two out of my day to, you know, train in my body, you know, physically. That's what I did on the farm every day, you know, or in a factory, you know, that's, you know, physically, I had physical labor for the most part to do my work, you know, to put food on my table every day. And now, you know, a lot of that's automated. We can just go to the grocery store and pick up our food. Somebody else has, you know, picked it and cleaned it and washed it and prepped it and drove it to the grocery store that I just pick it up off the shelf and or the farmer's market or wherever you shop. And you know, that's all been automated for us. And and the work that I do is, you know, I can focus on what I enjoy doing. And then I could take that time out of my day to, you know, to supplement this life that we have that's so surrounded by technology. So I think we have to walk away from it and still have that, you know, that connection to what it means to be human, to what it means to be here on Earth and enjoy company with others, company in the world that we live in. So there's got to be a balance in all things.
Yeah, very good. Well, this has really been fascinating. Good tips, good ideas. How can people, Nathan, follow you to say more about the book? Are you on LinkedIn? What is it? You know, those sort of basic stuff.
Yeah, so I wrote a book, The CEO's Digital Survival Guide. You can find it on, you know, Amazon and all the other bookstores. Or if you connect with me on LinkedIn, search up my name, Nathan Whitaker. Send me a private message on there, and I'd be happy to send you a free copy of the book. Love to connect to you. So that's an offer out there. So if you hear us on there, just message me directly, and I'll have my team send you a book. You can also visit our company's website. We're Stimulus Technologies. You can go to stimulustech.com, and best way to find out about what we do.
Great. Nathan, thank you.
Been a pleasure, Dean.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for listening to Leadervation with Dean Newland. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com, or check the show notes. Reimagine, facilitate, flourish. Transform your leadership success with Leadervation.